Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The farther you get away from the football, the farther you get away from football.
Olin Krutz.
What do we need from Caleb? Your number one job is to protect yourself. That's your number one job. You can blame the fifth round pick tackle if you want, right? You can do that. But like, I always live by this: who much is given, much is expected.
14-year NFL veteran.
I called Olin. I said, hey, you know, Josh got rolled up today, and you know, talked about it. And he didn't ask about the injury. He didn't ask what type of. He said, well, did he act? Lay there and cry about it, or did he get up and walk off? And I'm just like, Jesus, right?
Six-time Pro Bowler and four-time NFL All-Pro.
I was very fortunate because I got to practice against the best center in the league every single day in practice. It benefited my career. It benefited our defenses. Playing ability, it drives me crazy. Whenever I get a chance to talk about it, I bring up Olin because, in my opinion, he's the one guy that needs to be in there.
Football analyst for 670 The Score.
There are some pictures getting tweeted with this field at Soldier Field. You guys know the water tables are awfully high.
We feel it's going to be a nice surface. You know, we think it's going to be a fast surface.
Oh, this is still Eberflus's fault.
Just ask the players in the locker room. They'll tell you.
Yep. Olin Krutz with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We had a blast with Olin and Patrick leading into the Monday night game. And then things were going really well. But then they stopped going well and they went poorly. And then the Bears lost. So we talk with Olin every week, and thank you very much, O, for switching up days because we got Cubs baseball tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. I know that you've probably gone through this film four or five times now since the game was over. What's your biggest takeaway from what it is that you saw?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, I'm lucky. And you guys know my daughters love volleyball. And there's an old volleyball coach, Jim McLaughlin is his name. And I get to talk to him about volleyball. And he teaches me a lot about volleyball and just coaching in general. And he has this saying he likes to say. And he's a national championship coach at University of Washington, coach at Notre Dame. He says, I see way better than I hear, right? I see what you're doing on film. I see the way you play way better than the things that you're telling me. When I watch this film, guys, that's what I think about when it comes to the Chicago Bears. I hear all this stuff coming out of Hallis Hall about how intense they are, how they're detail-oriented. They're so happy their coaches are holding them to a higher standard. But when I turn the film on, I see way better than I hear. And I don't see that stuff, right? I see guys making a lot of mental mistakes. I see a lot of details not the way they're supposed to be. And it is week one. And there is a lot of improving that's going to come from a group and a unit and offense and defense that is going to learn new coaches and the coaching staff is going to learn about their players. But that was my immediate reaction when I turned the film on, whether it be a lineman not in the right place, double teams not working well. You heard Coach talk about we didn't get the mic point right. You can see that on film sometimes, whether it's the quarterback holding onto the ball too long or it's the running back not pressing the line of scrimmage and cutting 2 or 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. You can't stay on your block when a guy is doing that, or whether it's the defense not filling the gaps, you know, in the fourth quarter, when the Minnesota Vikings average in the fourth quarter 5.5 yards a carry and change the game. Their run game changed the game and made the defense play a little tighter, a little more aggressive, and then J.J. got hot, and then we lost the game, right? So that was my first reaction, Lawrence, when I watched this film. I just thought about what Coach Jim McLaughlin always says to me. I see way better than I hear.
It's great stuff, and we need you, Olin. Let's stay on the offense and tell us more about the non-Caleb issues. I feel like we've dissected that, and we kind of know where some of that is. But tell us what the offensive line and the running back did that jumped out to you. Give us a little more on that.
Yeah, when you watch it, right, I'm like, you guys have all these ex-quarterbacks on. I listen to them during the week. And I always think about, like, even for me, right, Speaks, when you ask me about O-line play,
yeah,
I'm an O-line apologist. By that, I mean I'll watch the O-line because I'm a former O-lineman, and I tell you why it's everyone else's fault. I think the O-line's playing pretty good. right? Because I think it's hard to do what they're doing. I'm like, well, I can see why you would miss that block. I can see why you would take that step if the running back would have just hit this hole. And if the running back would have just pressed it a little more, right? And if the quarterback would just get the ball out, if they'll make the play here and there. So my first thought is the inside three, definitely, who much is given. You guys heard me say coming in, who much is given, much is expected. The inside three needs to play better, right? Tooney, Dahlman, and Jackson. And Jonah Jackson, I don't know the last time he played right guard. I'd have to look that up, his stats. But I found it, you know, I was interested to see how he would adapt to that, because I think all his best football has been at left guard since he's been in the NFL, right? I think he's been a Pro Bowler there, maybe even closer than All-Pro when he was in Detroit. And the first thing the Rams did was move him to center, and that didn't work out. And now the Bears have moved him to right guard, and it looked like he struggled a little bit in pass pro with his hands. Okay, his hands knocked down now, going against two very good D-tackles that the Minnesota Vikings have signed this year. But also, he was also getting beat by the young guys and some rookies, and it looked like him and Dahlman had some trouble on where he was going to be in the protection and where Dahlman was going to be. And what you hope immediately is they'll learn how to play with each other, right? And then when you watch Tooney, maybe getting his feet under him just a little bit, you know, the pocket's getting pushed a little bit. Caleb now is a little shorter quarterback than he's ever played with. So maybe he watches film and says, man, I better go to a jump set here, keep these guys in a line of scrimmage. This quarterback isn't as tall as the guys that I have played with, and I need to keep guys out of his lap. And so when you watch and when you watch the running back, you know, I have a hard time talking a lot about Swift, because to me, they know what he is. I know what he is. I've been watching him for years. And we keep saying, you know, whether it was Coach Eberflus saying, man, we're going to get him to hit the hole. Now we got, man, don't worry. Eric Bieniemy is going to yell it into him, right? He's going to yell into him that he needs to run harder. So I just, you know, I like to see it like everybody else. You know, Manon guy, but he struggled a little bit in pass protection. We talked about how Ivan Pace Jr. drew holding calls against the Bears the years before. We talked about that in pregame. He did it again. Right, he did it again this week. He's a great blitzer. They do a nice job running a cross dog in there. They put Mononga and Dahlman in trouble. They put Dahlman and Jonah Jackson. Just when you watch that inside three, I think they'll grow together, guys. I think they'll get a little better, Speaks. But that was my immediate reaction watching just this film. We've only got to see the Bears once this year so far.
I'm glad that we're looking at this from the non-Caleb part of it, and we can get Olin's thoughts on Caleb too, but to stay with the run game thing and with zone runs in particular, I was having a conversation with Norv Turner about this last year. I got introduced by Wani, and we talked a little bit about it. I've heard him say this. I've heard other offensive linemen say this. Olin, you may have even said this to me. The running back's job on those plays, pay the coach and the O-line enough respect to get to the line of scrimmage before you make a decision on where it is that you're going. And there are sometimes when I watch DeAndre Swift, I feel like he's trying to determine where things are before the play develops. So how, for an older player now, like this is a guy that's played a lot of football in the NFL, can he change? Is it possible for him to understand that sometimes those plays are not him? There's a disrespect to the play a little bit if he doesn't kind of stick with the timing of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's well said. And my first answer would be probably not, right? No. I mean, he was in Detroit and he was in Philadelphia, and now he's with the Bears. And, you know, he kind of looks like a third down scat back guy to me, right? And he could prove me wrong, and that'd be great. But no, I would say probably not. But we talked about on the pregame show when you guys talked about the run game. And I think it's important for everyone to understand that the run game, you know, I said Ben Johnson's run game is what I heard when he got here. Right. Well, there's a guy named Hank Fraley who coaches O-line in Detroit. He's now the O-line run game coordinator. Right. And there's Scotty Montgomery, who was the running backs coach, assistant head coach last year for the Detroit Lions. And then there's Dan Campbell, who understands the run game as a tight end. The run game is everyone works together, and you hear Coach Ben Johnson saying, you know, me and Coach Bieniemy talked about we got to get a little more carries to Manon guy, right? So this run game now, guys, I think they're growing into it. They're starting to learn each other. Coach Dan Roschar, what they all want to become, what they're best at. They remember this is the first game that Joe Thuney played. This is the first game they all played together up there up front. The run game is everybody working together, right? Everybody on the same page. You heard him talk about the mic point. They had some mistakes there. So I think even bigger than Swift and him, and he needs to press the hole a little more, in my opinion. Again, I'm an offensive lineman. I'm going to give you a reason why the O-line wasn't at fault, right? I'll give you a reason why it was hard on everybody. So I'll tell you right now, though, to me, when I watch the film, Lawrence, the biggest problem is them deciding what they are, gap scheme, outside zone. They toss the ball to get the linebackers to run and try to run mid-zone. They ran a few plays like this. There wasn't a lot of, like, counters. There wasn't a lot of different looks for the linebackers to read, to throw them off a little bit, to throw off their reads, get them to fit wrong. So I think they're all working together, all trying to learn. They finally got film. We hired Ben Johnson because we think he is really good at scheme. And I think even when you watch that film, you can see his thoughts. But then now he has to marry with, what do my players do well? What do the players I have now do well? And you heard him say he never really felt the run game, I think was his quote after the game. Never felt good about the run game. And look, when you're giving it to Gibbs and Montgomery and you're running behind three All-Pros for the Lions, you feel good about calling run plays, right? So they are trying to find their way here. The inside three of the Bears offensive line, big things are expected of them. Darnell Wright is a good football player. Cole Kmet, I thought, battled well. Colson Loveland's on the field. Burden, all these guys, they got to find what they want to do. When I see DJ Moore running back, all I think to myself is that means you don't have a running back. You know what I mean? Like, if I see you handing the ball to DJ Moore, my first thought is, okay, now you don't, but you're just trying to find someone to give it to, like, that you feel good about him running the ball and he can make a big play for you. So the Bears, I think, are going through a lot of this, like, starting to learn what they are, what they can become. And I think that what hit us hard with all the hope we had, and you can't blame us, man. We've all seen a lot of losing around here for a while. I think what hit us hard is how far away this Bears team is, and you got to give them maybe 8 to 10 weeks, like we talked about on the pregame show, to really judge what they are.
So that's even with the run game? That's what I was wondering, Olin. Like, what's a fair amount of time to give them to adjust schematically and personnel-wise to what they have and what they do well in the run game?
You know, one thing I learned when I got done playing, right, and I started coaching, and I had all these great sayings, I had all these great plans, and I went into my first, this is Little League, obviously not NFL like these guys are doing, and coach some high school football, and sometimes you feel great about the things you're saying, and we're going to be tough, and we're going to be physical, and this is who we are. And then you play your first game, you get hit in the mouth, and you realize, man, this stuff really doesn't work, right? It takes you a while to grow into your team, and sometimes it shocks you and you're surprised. And I think that some of the Bears was they really believed in the plan and what they believed in and who were they going to give the ball to, and they believed that was going to work, Speegs and Lawrence. And I think now you hear Coach Johnson saying, man, like, I got to call a better game. Like, well, man, the first thing I think when I hear that, leader. Right. There's a leader right there. He walked into it and said, look, I need to get better at calling plays, scheming guys up, getting guys in the right spot. And what he's saying to you is we're not only learning about the players. Right. He's learning about what Coach Bieniemy likes to call in certain situations and his little different way he teaches the running back to run outside zone and inside zone and all the plays that he likes. And then there's Dan Roshaw, right? It's the first time they've all worked together. And these things are bigger factors than people think they are. And that's why I sat in the background for a long time when people were like, Ben Johnson's bringing the run game. And I thought to myself, I swear all he brought was a wide receiver coach. Right, like all he brought was Anton Randall and an assistant quarterback coach. So all he brought was pass concepts, right? And so Hank Fraley stayed in Detroit and got a run game coordinator. You know, Dan Campbell gave him run game coordinator title. What does that tell you? He handles the run game. So that was their run game. Obviously, Ben Johnson has something to do it, but they're all together there. And now the coaches here need to learn what they all like together, what their details are, and then what running back runs that best and get that all together. But, guys, the best thing in the world, the best thing in the world in football is to have film of what you are and what you want and what they're doing wrong and to coach it up and everyone to look at themselves and say, man, we need to do this better. And I talked about in the post game right after the game. Maybe finally the players all realize that this ain't Matt Eberflus's fault.
So much pre-snap ugliness on offense, so much pre-snap motion in this offense. How different is the ask on the road as opposed to at home? And does that help them at all to go silent on the road and not be able to do some of the stuff they were trying to do early on here at home?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We know that there's a lot of, they call that dummy cadence, right? They have, some teams have a color, and they, when they say the color, like say yellow. When I say yellow, we're not going to snap the ball. So yellow 80, yellow 80. Said, oh, you're just trying to get the defense to show you what they want to do, what play you want to get into. And it seemed like Caleb was doing a lot of that. And the offensive linemen, for whatever reason, they were just jumping off sides, or the cadence had no rhythm to it. DJ Moore one time was just a lot of it to watch, right? And there were a lot of penalties out there. With the silent count, it's just a little harder, right? You're a step behind, like Aiden Hutchinson getting off the ball. You're going to be a step behind a guy who's a good football player anyway. They're going to come in there. The Lions fans, and of course, with Ben Johnson back, they want to win that game. It's going to be extraordinarily loud out there. So it's going to provide a whole set of different circumstances. If you're struggling communicating and getting the mic point and getting everybody on the same page at home, well, you are going to struggle on the road communicating, making the mic point, getting everybody on the same page. We all know we got to go to get the blocks, to get what we got to get. So this Bears offense, Speaks and Lawrence, huge challenge this week, man, with what I see on film, with where they are in this offense, in this system, in the communication and understanding each other, and getting the ball early, and the receivers knowing where the quarterback wants them, and the quarterbacks knowing what the receivers want, the O-line knowing who to block on each play. Looks like a big challenge to me in Detroit this week.
Oh, what did you see Minnesota do on offense late in the third and all through the fourth quarter that jump-started their quarterback and their offense overall?
Yeah, they started running the ball with a lot of success, right? And I'm going to look at my sheet here. So Jordan Mason really gave them a boost there. And they went to a couple gap plays, and they hit downhill hard and got it looked like they got Dennis Allen a little off balance there with what to call. And maybe I'll crowd the line of scrimmage a little more, get my guys up there, try to stop the run. And then JJ just got comfortable. And I think what happened to a lot of guys, I think what's underestimated sometimes is, they have those tablets on the sideline, right? You guys all see them looking at it. And they're seeing the plays, and they're getting a little more comfortable. And that's why you get worried about letting guys hang around and letting them just kind of hang in the game, because eventually, like you saw, the momentum can change. Somebody can get comfortable. You know when it really started, Lawrence, when you watched the film? Remember when Thielen dropped the ball on 3rd-and-2?
Yes.
Yes, that was a great throw by JJ. And when he threw that, it was like, oh, man, he's starting to see it. Right, he's trying to see the open guy now. The ball came out fast, and then he hit Justin Jefferson on that out route while he had a defender in his face. Right, the left tackle who got beat all game, the backup left tackle school got beat all game by the Bears. He got beat again, guy in his face. He stepped into it and threw an out route to Justin Jefferson, and that's when I thought to myself, guys, oh man, here we go, right? And then the touchdown, the Bears are running a cross dog, and for whatever reason, dropping Montez Sweat in the coverage. And then they find – it reminded me, guys, when Aaron Jones found Noah Sewell, one-on-one, and they hit that touchdown, did you guys have a flashback? I was wondering where – I was there. When did Aaron Jones do that before, right? And I went back, and I kept checking the Minnesota plays. It was Green Bay opening week 2023. He beat T.J. Edwards on an angle route a touchdown. You guys remember that?
Yes, now I do. Absolutely.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was like, why do I remember him beating a linebacker one-on-one and saying to myself, why in the hell is a linebacker one-on-one with Aaron Jones, right? But a beautiful design there with the guy coming across Brisker's face and holding him just for a second. And JJ, and it looked like they were talking him on that play, maybe at halftime on the sideline. And guys, Kevin O'Connell is very good, man. He's very good, and I think he got the better of Dennis Allen in the fourth quarter. But it started with the run game. It started up front. They started moving guys. Started leaning on them. All the guys they brought in Will Fries this year. They drafted Donovan Jackson. They got Ryan Kelly over from the Indianapolis Colts, and they were coming downhill at the Bears and working their play action off of those looks and they just started moving the ball and having success. And like I talked about with those tablets, you get a little more comfortable, a little more coaching points. And when Thielen dropped that ball and he put his foot in the ground, I thought to myself, man, he's getting a little more comfortable against his Bears defense. And now he's starting to see where he wants to go with the ball.
So many season openers. So many times you've been disappointed that your quarterback is not better than the division opponent. That one, that was Jordan Love and Justin Fields. All the buildup, yeah. Like, I think we got a guy who's better than your new guy. He's not good yet. And then we're like, oh, maybe Jordan's good. This is great stuff, Olin. This has all been outstanding.
He's very, very talented up there in Green Bay. And we'll get a chance to watch him and Jaden Daniels tonight. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. We're actually going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. On defense, what did the Bears do well, and what did they struggle with?
Man, for three quarters, right? They were lights out. Right? They played really good with three really good football players out, right? Jalen Johnson, maybe the best player on our defense, right? And just, you know, Tyler Gordon and just T.J. Edwards is, you know, they're very good. So they did really good job of taking advantage of the left tackle. Dial got after J.J. for a while, and they shut down the run. And you know, the pick six, man. I mean, you know, I was already smoking my victory cigar. I think I might have cursed the Bears, right? I celebrated a little too early. I'm getting old, you
know. That's not in your character at all.
No, yeah, man, it's not. But I haven't won in a long time, so I don't really know how to handle myself anymore. You know, when I see us get up and, you know, great play by right there in an all-out blitz and reading that. And then it's just – when the defense played good, and then at the end, man, and whether it's you wore out and you're on the field too long and they just couldn't get that run stopped and get J.J. off the field. And it just Kevin O'Connell was slowly putting his game plan together of how he wanted to attack and get his quarterback comfortable. And then things just started clicking for them. The momentum swung one way and our offense couldn't get the ball and put points on the board, whether it be, missed field goals or penalties or whatever it was in that game. And it really is. I hate to say this, but too bad, because for three quarters, the defense was lights out. They were lights out. And then for three drives, they just couldn't stop them. And J.J. got hot and their plays started to hit and they started to find guys like Noel Sewell one-on-one, and their run play, their run game, man, even that zone read that he called and J.J. scored on. I mean, it was a great play call, right? It was a great play call. They got the alignment they wanted. They got outside, they released the tight end, and he just outran everybody. I think it was like 14 yards for a touchdown.
It's so crazy on that play. Oh, like just the subtle move that Hockenson made towards the inside. Like what
they call
that
a bluff block.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call that a bluff block. Yeah, they're bluffing him, and he thinks a block's coming, and boom, I'm outside. And the rest was history, like you're saying. You know, it's just everything, the plan started to work. The quarterback started to see things a little better. Biggest thing for me, though, was, and you know, don't count on my math. Please ask ChatGPT. But I did a little math on the fourth quarter, and I did a math on all their runs. I even added in the runs on their last drive. That was only 1, 1, and 3, I think. But they averaged 5.5 yards a carry. In the fourth quarter, they ran the ball, guys, 13 times, right? And they just finally, the dam broke. And they just kept scoring on the Chicago Bears. And Dennis Allen, who had called a great game, sometimes the thing just changes. And Kevin O'Connell started to get the best of him and started beating him on different plays and calling the right protections and getting the right play calls. Like, you know, you call a first and 10 out of gun, and you're just guessing that Noah Sewell is going to be a man on Aaron Jones. And it's a great guess by him. And, you know, obviously he's not a guess. He does a lot of film work. He does a lot of studying, and he knows what's going to be called in that situation.
In a terrible season for the Rams last year, they did start Jonah Jackson at right guard at one point last year. So he was bad everywhere for them last year. Mm-hmm. It's a big gamble.
Yeah.
It's a big gamble by Johnson.
I don't think he has a ton of, you know, his best football it's been at left guard. So I'm very interested to see him grow at that position. I thought he overset a lot of things, and him and Dolman didn't really kind of know where each other were going to be, right? And that takes a long time to learn, right? Whether it was Roberto Garza, whether it was Rex Tucker, whether it was Chris Valero, whether it was Reuben Brown or Steve Edwards or Josh Beekman or the 50,000 guards I played with. It always took a while to learn what they did and how they wanted me to sit and where they wanted me to be.
Oh, you're the best. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
That's Olin Krutz. He breaks stuff down for us, and we're thankful that he does. Okay, we have dissected the Vikings game. Is it time to turn the page?
Finally!
Is it time to play the game? We'll do that next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Don't you guys do a turn the page segment
Wednesday. On Wednesday?
It's time to turn the page.
Turn the page Wednesday.
I don't know when I turn the page.
What we feel like is a great opportunity to turn the page.
We just haven't been able to like turn the page.
But that's what you have to do. You got to turn the page.
I think now we all can move on.
Looking ahead to this week's opponent.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Because we need to know when to turn the page.
There I go.
That's right. We try to turn the page on Wednesdays, but when there's a Monday night game, we then turn the page on a Thursday. The Bears are going to take on the Lions at Ford Field in Detroit. So we're going to turn the page and start looking at their next opponent. So let's talk about it, the relationship between Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell. And this is Ben Johnson on whether or not the two have been in touch.
We texted back and forth a few weeks ago, and so we have been in touch. But that friendship's always going to be there. I view him like family, and I think he would tell you the same thing. And so that'll never change. We have fond memories of back when I was just a young snot-nosed computer punk, as he likes to call it, in Miami. And I feel like we both grown up in this profession of coaching. You know, he'd been in it for a long time as a player, and we both come a long way. So you look back at that Miami staff back in 2012 and 2013, and there are a lot of really good coaches on that staff, and that's part of the journey, is seeing where everyone goes.
So last season, Lawrence, the Lions first in points, second in total yards. They lose Ben Johnson. The defense loses Aaron Glenn. They also lost the passing game coordinator, Tanner Engstrand, the assistant quarterbacks coach, JT Parrott, the tight ends coach, Steve Heiden, wide receivers coach, Antoine Randall-El, defensive line coach, Terrell Williams. And so John Morton steps up as the OC, and four-year linebackers coach, Kelvin Shepard, steps up as the DC. And they did not have a good showing in week number one with all those people gone, specifically on offense, where they had their worst graded game since 2023. The offensive line had their lowest graded game since 2022. 46 yards rushing on just 22 carries. The interior of that offensive line has shuffled big time. Frank Ragnow retired. Kevin Zeitler left in free agency.
Dan Skipper's on the practice squad.
Yeah, man. Like, the guard, Graham Glasgow, has moved to center. Lowest graded offensive player on the team last week from PFF. They got a new second round rookie in this kid, Tate Ratledge, two-time All-America at Georgia. But then they got a sixth rounder at the other guard. And so that offensive line is in disarray, man. This maybe is a game where Grady Jarrett, if he plays, and Jervon Dexter can do some damage in the middle.
They lost a lot of people, but they may have gotten the most important person back. That's Aiden Hutchinson.
Second highest grade of any defender in the Packers' loss. He's still good.
He's very dangerous and very fast and very strong and going to present quite the challenge for Ben Johnson and his offense this week.
Yeah, I think anybody we play is going to always think of what I do. You know, WWD. D. And I would not let Hutch wreck a game. There's no way. So they will have answers. They're not going to let him just, particularly on passing downs, they're not going to let him ever have a one-on-one. And if they do, it'd be rare. So, or balls out really quick. So they will. And he knows that. We know that. It's understood. So that's the game he has to play. And, that's not for the for the faint of heart, that's for sure. But it also means other guys got to step up and win, you know, and it'll be about us putting other guys in positions to where we think we'll draw some of those, and they got to win and win quickly.
I just had a rough vision of Caleb not getting the ball out quick and thinking he could deke Aiden Hutchinson on the end, like he thinks he can deke lots of people, and he can. He's real good at that. But I had an ugly vision of that. We'll see. Couple newbies on that Lions defense. DJ Reed is their big free agent signing at a corner. He graded out the worst of any defender on their team by PFF. There's one investment. And there's a new long-haired linebacker alert. They already have Alex Anzalone.
How you doing?
Yeah. And definitely don't mix those letters around in his name.
Don't do it. Don't do it. He's got a backup now. Grant Stewart came over from the Colts, special teams guy too. But they have a backup long-haired linebacker now. So congrats on that, Lions fans.
The Vikings are going to take their 1-0 record, and they're going to take on the Falcons on Sunday Night Football. J.J. McCarthy, one offensive player of the week in the NFC. Here's the lessons that he learned after beating the Bears.
A little surprised, but, you know, at the end of the day, Monday Night Football, it's a tremendous win we got, but that's a team award. I don't look at that as an individual award at all. You know, defense kept us in it the whole game and found a way to bounce back offensively. So, yeah, it's great and all, but, you know, it's on to the next one. Big takeaway is, you know, just all the little fundamental things that, you know, we kind of lean on is something that, you know, isn't 100% there. So just being able to go back onto the practice field and keep, you know, making those concrete habits. And, you know, I feel like the way we adapted as an offense throughout the game when it wasn't going our way, you know, in those first three quarters, and, you know, being able to experience that and know what we have is something that was huge to take away from. But, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we're definitely not even close to where we want to be as an offense. So it was a lot of things that we learned.
Welcome to the NFL, kid. Glad you're healthy. You get two primetime games to start your season. And in that game, Sunday Night Lawrence, two quarterbacks taken after Caleb Williams. We get the chance to look at with Michael Penix and with JJ.
Speaking of quarterbacks that were taken after Caleb Williams, we get to actually watch one of them tonight. The one who's really, really good, who might be the best quarterback in the NFC, playing against the guy that might also be the best quarterback in the NFC. Packers versus Commanders tonight. The Packers hosting, they're 3-point favorites in this game. Here's our guy, Matt LaFleur, on the challenges of preparing on a short week and what stood out to him in that first week having Micah Parsons.
A lot of information going at them. That's always the challenge, right, on a Thursday night game. So we try to get them the information as quickly as possible and give them time to digest it, to go through it. All in all, just the entire defense, the urgency of which we played with, I feel like it's the best I've seen from our group since I've been here. So that is, it was inspiring to me to watch those guys go out and play. And I think when you get like that, it's contagious, and everybody kind of elevates their game. And so that's exactly what we need each and every week. And we got a hell of a challenge this week against, in my opinion, one of the top offenses in the game. I mean, they got a ton of weapons with McLaurin, Debo, Zach Ertz. Obviously, Jaden Daniels, there's nothing he can't do, so... then you got guys like Eckler, and I mean, they just got a lot of players that they can get the ball to. So it's going to be a great challenge for our defense.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that game in a minute. On Turn the Page, we always look at the Bears game and the next opponent in detail and then move on to the division. This is quite an interesting one tonight.
Yeah, it is. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it because I think that, like you were saying, that what did you call the Rorschach? The film is Rorschach?
Film is the Rorschach test, not the Arnold Rorschach test. That's a very
different test.
Folks, if you get that reference, make sure your affairs are in order.
Yes, please do that. But I think that that's how you can look at Jordan Love, the quarterback, too.
Yeah, but when you said he might be the best in the NFC, you heard me. I couldn't hide the...
Yeah, but there are moments when you go, oh my God, look at the stuff that he does. We'll see who comes out on top tonight. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit more about that game coming up. We are going to talk about Thursday Night Football. Woo!
Commanders versus Packers. Are you going to be watching? You, the Bears fan, you going to be checking in to see? Because both of these teams are on the schedule this year.
Can I give you my definitive answer on who the best quarterback in the NFC is when we come back as well?
Sure.
Thank
I
you.
Like that tease.
Thank you.
Look at this. A tease that's only like 5 minutes instead of...
That's a tease for all you listeners out there. Stay tuned.
72 hours. Spiegs will tell you next here on The Score. There I go.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Second and 10. As Goff's being chased by Parsons. Look out. He's got him. His first sack as a Green Bay Packer.
Thursday night prime football is back. That's where you can catch tonight's game. The opener is always on NBC. Then we are into the schedule. Because, you know, football fans have to have every streaming device in every channel to watch the games that they love. So we just got to update people and let them know where they can watch tonight's game.
It's so true, man.
It's a prime broadcast tonight, hey, not NBC.
I turned on the game on YouTube, the one in Brazil, and my cable box asked me if I wanted new hardware, if I have NFL Sunday ticket, and I clicked OK, and I got new hardware today. So, like,
at the house?
Like, hardware for the cable system. So, like, the football, what all I'm saying is that football is driving commerce like crazy right now, and it's happening everywhere. But this is a good game tonight, man. Micah Parsons, he played 30 snaps last week. They had 67 as a defense. He only played 30.
And he had an impact.
Is he going to play more tonight?
Well, with the short week, I do wonder about that. And you are talking about a more mobile quarterback that he has to chase around.
That is true.
So I wonder if – I bet that number will be about the same.
Percentage-wise, yeah.
Yeah, I fear they'll be there. And then that with the – mini bye, I think the next game they play, it'll be full Micah Parsons.
Well, that defense was completely and utterly dominant against the Lions team, admittedly on the road with new coordinators and new offensive line and everything. But we'll see them tonight against a very good offense. We heard Matt LaFleur talking about it during Turn the Page, but Deebo Samuel, Lawrence, for a fifth-round draft pick, he had 10 targets. And he had the 19-yard touchdown run. He looked like Deebo Samuel in that game.
What's crazy about it, too, is they didn't play that well.
Washington?
Yeah, they scored 21 points, and that's not what you're used to. Like that offense has got some explosion to it, and we didn't quite see it in week one. And you would think that it would be harder for us to see it tonight because of how good Green Bay's defense is.
You think it's an interesting thing because as LaFleur was talking about all the different weapons they have, like Eckler's good out of the backfield and they got Deebo and we know what Jaden can do and we know how good Terry McLaurin is. I love that dude.
I'm very happy he got paid too. And I know that it was a bit of a circus that was going on there, but that guy has been through so many rough days with that franchise and was the consummate professional. And then last year, early on, even though Washington was having success, he wasn't really a part of it. And every time they talked to him, they were like, no, my opportunities are going to come. Like, this guy's great. This guy that we've got playing quarterback is great. And when he pops, man, you guys are all going to see it. And he was 100% right about it. So I'm happy that a guy like that gets paid. Because ordinarily, wide receivers his age don't get paid the way that he got paid.
No, you're right. Are you convinced that the running back thing is all right? That Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt?
Bill. Lil Bill.
Tell people why his name is Bill.
Because when he was a kid, he looked like the cartoon character Little Bill. So that just stuck.
It's so funny. When
it's
I first,
a great nickname.
When I first heard it, I thought it was just because it's hard to say Ja'Cory and Crosky Merritt and whatever. That is like too many letters or words or whatever. But no, it's because of Lil Bill. He had 10 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown.
Where was he drafted? Late, right?
Very late.
Seventh round, right?
Was he seventh round?
I think
he,
so.
He wasn't after Manamungai, was he?
I think he might have been. He was somewhere around there where he got drafted.
Seventh round, 245th overall.
So they got him out there working.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like
making plays.
He was the star of their running game in week number one.
You said 245th?
245, yeah.
Manungai was 233.
Okay. So
yeah.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia.
Good job, Alex.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to. I sent Alex on a crazy goose chase looking for game logs of Jonah Jackson. When did he play right guard? Because Olin said it. Olin asked the question. I thought we as a show should try and answer it for him. You know what I mean?
I kind of feel like, you know, you're just like giving him the business.
Who?
Like,
Alex?
Hey, Alex, make sure you get on that.
No.
Get on it.
I think
if PFF didn't have a paywall, I would have found it.
I think Alex, in that role, like, informational stuff comes up. He's a smart man and a curious man. And a serious man.
And handsome.
And a damn handsome man.
Let's not forget that part.
No, I agree. And
he's also very tall.
He's half Jewish. Do you know that?
I did not. Yeah, is that a thing?
yeah, it's a thing.
I've been asked that question my entire life.
So practicing?
So you got half circumcised, which is an interesting way to go through life.
So wait, I am a little ignorant to this. It matters, right? Which parent?
Yeah, you know.
So if the mom is Jewish, then you are in the tribe.
Yeah, but you know. You're on it.
But if it's your dad,
then
you're culturally Jewish.
Culturally, you're Jewish. Like, so, you're culturally a White Sox fan.
Correct.
So I am culturally Jewish then.
Okay. It's good to know.
So is the Roopster.
But
he's also, you know.
And are people required to wear yarmulkes at
Reuben's Bar Mitzvah?
Because that was a question that was asked. Because Tanny was like, can I just wear a White Sox cap?
Right. You know, funny story. I texted the rabbi.
I've got one that's a Comiskey Park pinwheel that I'm excited to roll out for
Do
the
it!
Crowd.
Roll it out, baby! Because we ordered the custom yarmulkes for Reuben. They're going to be here just in time. The satin, he asked for gold. Gold satin yarmulkes are on their way.
Hey, man.
Guess where I went? You'll never guess the website.
Yarmulkes are us.
Yarmulke.com.
Oh!
You just got to learn how to spell it, folks. It's a weird word. But you go to yarmulke.com, you can get them turned around in a day. Trust
me. In a day?
I had to. I had no choice.
So they delivered them?
They're on their way. Ooh. They'll be here tomorrow.
So I got time to get my Wu-Tang yarmulke as a backup for the after party.
Just get enough for everybody, man. So that thing can be lit yarmulke-wise.
Okay. This segment is taking a weird turn. But a good one, because our guy Reuben is having his bar mitzvah. He's becoming a man this weekend, and that's a great thing.
He really is. And Alex is already a man. He's a well-established, excellent producer of a man.
Not by the laws of the Torah, he's not. That is
You're not going to hold that against him, though.
No, I'm not. You might.
No, I will not. I will not. Everybody's welcome in.
See?
We need everybody we can get.
That's
let's be honest.
Let's bring everyone in. That's bring it on in here. Bring it on in for the real thing. Mark Grody is going to join us with a Bears hit. There's a lot to get to. You will hear from Jalen Johnson and DJ Moore and DeAndre Swift and HT, Chucklehut himself, will have some thoughts for you about why the special teams broke bad. We'll discuss all that with Groats next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.